For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
My dad's not here right now. He's still at work. So I'm going to bless him.
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I'm going to see if there's a clean version so then my parents and the people at my school will not get mad at me. We've got the spritzer filled with water just in case if stuff gets too fire. I'm going to set up the speaker and I'm going to listen to
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I think this is the best
Mike Shope
feature that I've heard in a long time. I think his flow is really good on it, and I like his aggressiveness on it. And
the Bulldog
put not enough effort in it. I think overall his flow was good, but I don't like that mumble rapping. That was my review of
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Didn't need the spritzer. Wasn't fire enough. No spritzer for you. No spritzer.
Hi there. Let's have a fun Friday. Who says fun more than Sam Paniatovich? He'll be on with me in less than half an hour. Bulldog is off one more time, and then he and I will be back together on Monday. Sam wants me to ask him about his hanging out last night with Eddie Vedder. So remind me to do that. I think Sam will remind me to do that in case I forget, but hopefully I won't forget. Saying it helps. Saying it now helps. Yes, so Bulldog had his week off. I took my week off last week, sort of par for the course in the summer. There might be more of that in August, but I think of it as there's a break, not a bad thing, mostly good, it's just different, in this job from the end of the Sabre season to the beginning of training camp for the Bills, which, I mean, for the last, most of the last 15 years has been long. It's been like almost 3 months, 2.5 months, where we, I mean, it gets easier every year, but you know, you sometimes feel like you're straining to come up with conversations that people are sort of like into. Like a lot of, I think, sports fans still listen casually. Our numbers reflect that, but are not necessarily driving around thinking about, you know, what the Bills should do at outside linebacker, that kind of thing. So it gives us, as I see it, again, just speaking for myself, the freedom, if you will, to freelance, to bring up lots of different things. But I was thinking how this year has been different, significantly different in that way. Like, it's almost here. I tell people when it gets to be like the middle of August, especially when my kids were younger and maybe my friends' kids were younger, and they'd be like, oh, can you believe summer is almost over? I'm like, it's not over, though. It's still 3 weeks before school starts. It's still more than that before actually summer ends, literally. So don't rush it. We get to August, and I think we're all pretty exhausted from the heat and from, you know, if you're a mom or a dad, driving your kids everywhere to tournaments and whatever. And so August comes around, and that slows down, and like, oh, can't believe it's already over. It's not. And so it's not over today either. But this year for us, for me, has been really fun, given that the Sabres took us to the middle of May, and then you have the World Cup, and now we're into the end of the World Cup and the Open Championship. I mean, that's there every year, and before another week or so goes by, then it'll be training camp. Like, it's been kind of packed with stuff. I mean, we're not in here mostly breaking down World Cup games, but it's there. Like when the Olympics are on, when? 2 years ago? The Summer Olympics, I mean, when they were in Paris 2 years ago. You had that, and that's all kinds of fun content too. So this summer has kind of flown, as I see it, you know, how it feels to me being in here. And I would say too, now here comes the always the same preface with me. I'm gullible, but I think in terms of the Sabres, Connor Hellebuyck is still like a very realistic possibility. Even though normally when you get to, what is today? The 17th. The 17th of July, if not the 7th of July, is already kind of the point where the action has pretty much settled. And your team is your team. But, I mean, we've got our morning guys looking up Winnipeg Jets social media posts. And Jeremy tweeted how, this was a couple days ago, how the Jets opening night announcement tweet didn't have Hellebuck in either of the two pictures. And Sneaky Joe was on that yesterday and went back in their feed and looked up the last time he was in one of their pictures, which was on his birthday in May. Their season was over by then, for what it's worth. But it has felt to me, and I don't want to go long on Hellebuck, but I just want to say here on a Friday that I think the chances that he's traded are still pretty good. And I think if he is traded, the Sabres sound like, you know, they might be the team. They're certainly, I think, one of the teams who would be in play for him. The thing about that, though, is like, okay, you're negotiating with Winnipeg. You're Jarmo Kekalainen, and you're interested in Hellebuck at your price, and you're trying to wait them out. You think the Jets have shown, and maybe even said to you, that they want to trade this player. They're ready to do it. It's been pretty public. I was saying around the time of the draft that I thought it was relevant, thought it was interesting that a lot of the NHL insiders were talking and tweeting about Hellebuck all the time, which for me was because there was pressure, maybe not pressure, that the Jets wanted action, and that's one way you might think you can get it, is to just keep putting his name online, keep putting it out there that, you know, you're open to moving him. So with that and just sort of how Hellebuck has talked and how it's all been reported, it has seemed to me consistently for, I mean, at least a month, however long since we started talking about this, that Winnipeg would want to make a trade. But here are the Sabres and maybe other teams too. This is just, you know, kind of, I want to say an educated guess, but I don't know from the inside what's happening. I know Chad DeDominicis has said that he thinks the chances are really low for the Sabres on Hellebuck, so maybe it isn't worth spending too much time on. But I still think that the Jets want to do this. And I don't know if the fact that he's not in a picture on their Twitter is anything. But I can imagine, I'd actually like to know more about that world. Because it's not the general manager who's tweeting on behalf of the team, of course. But I think there probably are times when management weighs in or steps in on what the team's social media team is doing. And I could see it that the Jets organization, the GM, the owner, whoever in power would tell social media people, like, let's leave him out, which would be a really interesting existence if you were one of those people. I mean, it's not a super high-ranking position, I would think, in most sports organizations, but maybe there are times when you are, like, one of the first people to find out stuff, which would be pretty good. Of course, you best not repeat it. So I don't know. Maybe it means something that he's not in those pictures. Maybe it doesn't. I kind of think if it were I in charge of that stuff, if I had any sort of talent in graphic design and had any sort of aptitude there, I was in charge of putting the tweet out with the home opener and, you know, let's go October, whatever, be there. He would be in the picture every year necessarily. Like, he's my biggest star. And they didn't do that. So anyway, long way of saying, I still think Winnipeg probably wants to make that trade. And here are the Sabres waiting them out now as we get to July 17th. And their training camp is, what, 2 months away. I think the Sabres, this is a really, I hope I'm right. Not even that it necessarily ends in a trade, but I hope I'm right in thinking that the Jets want to move the player and the Sabres would like to trade for him. But they both want to do it on their own terms. They don't have a deal yet. And if I am, which is that the Sabres want Hellebuyck. I mean, it's not something you can just do casually. This is not just sort of a, this is not even Patrick Kane as an idea. Like, okay, we'll take Patrick Kane. Or maybe even somebody less than Patrick Kane. Like, just sort of, I mean, no signing is made on a whim. But obviously there's a scale. And some are more foundational than others. And this is a, this would be a foundational pivot, change, move by the Sabres if they were to do it. And I just think, as it might seem, as it does to me, generally advantageous that they're sort of the side with leverage. If Winnipeg wants to move its superstar player, then they probably feel like they have to do it. And we were there with Hasek, we were there with Eichel, where the Sabres felt like, you know, ultimately that was the choice they needed to make, as painful as it would be to their fans and to their team. But they both, in both cases, did they do that. And you can sort of see that coming with Eichel, with Hasek in both cases. Hasek is 25 years ago now, but in both cases, it was, you could see the train coming down the tracks. Like, eventually, this guy's not playing for them anymore. This is going to happen. And so, I mean, that could be the Red Wings with Larkin. There are lots of times when players ask for trades and it doesn't happen. So it doesn't always have to happen in end in defeat, if you will. But, you know, here are the Jets. He's not on the Twitter page or whatever. Opening night graphics. Any of it. It just feels, it continues to feel to me like they would want to do it. And now you have the Sabres on the other side and maybe other teams kind of trying to wait them out. I haven't even said it yet. I'm talking and talking. But that's actually what I should be doing, because, you know, Bulldog is not here and this is the time of the show where I kind of talk alone for 22 minutes. The Sabres can't really wait forever on this, though, right? Is there a point at which, and it might be September, maybe. Could it? When would the time be? I mean, you haven't played games yet when you get to September. So there's nothing about that that's too, like September 1st, say. There's nothing about that that would necessarily make it too late. And maybe the Sabres themselves, if all of this is right, that they're hoping to get a deal done for this player, have a date in mind. But, you know, but what? Like, I think you want to get these things done as early as possible. And so there might be kind of a tug of war where the Sabres don't want to give up what they're being asked for, because they also have, they know they have time to sort of try to wait it out. But I think for them, at least in terms of the marketing side, which if I'm going to use the Winnipeg Jets Twitter, then I can try to apply that to the Sabres too, whether that's social media or the fans or anything. Even if it might be the roster, like if the Sabres were to swing a trade for him today, maybe that frees them up in some way, or, I mean, it wouldn't free them up financially, opens them up to some other free agent idea or trade idea that just makes them that much more interesting as a destination for some other player. Again, most of that dust has already settled. I mean, we're well past the draft and most of free agency, so I don't know how much in terms of roster management there is to do if you were to make that trade. But, you know, just speaking for myself, wouldn't that move, no matter almost what it costs the Sabres, wouldn't that move be worth tons in the fan base? Money, tickets, jerseys. I mean, if they traded for him today, they would have racks of his jerseys available when? I mean, I don't know. It's summer. Maybe they're not used to any sort of activity downtown in the store or anything like in the summer, but suddenly they trade for a superstar goalie. It's a great name and number and jersey too. Like, that's aesthetically for me that it really works. If they were to do that, they could get just the additional time before the season selling it. And now they can't. I mean, this again is all based on the premise that they would want to do this. But I have always, or a long thought, that they do, and that this player probably will be traded. I think I heard that Elliot Friedman even today reiterated that while things are quiet on Hellebuyck, that he still thinks there will be a trade. I hope I have that right. I'll correct that if I don't. So you can't, well, you can wait. You can wait as long as you want, I guess, until you get to a point where it's just over and he's traded somewhere else. So that's the end of that. But I would think that they would want the most they can get on and, well, off the ice, really, mostly, in the offseason with him on the roster just for, you know, financial benefits. Well, maybe it will happen. Maybe it'll happen today. I don't know. I mean, I'm not hearing anything specific about that, but I'm kind of working, you know, to the original point or two that I made, like how the summer has been kind of busy in here for content with the Sabres playoff run and other things that have happened. This rumor is part of that, and you could choose to not care about it or not believe in it at all, think the Sabres wouldn't trade for the player, and then, you know, we just move on to something else. But I'm still buying that they want to. Sam Panayotovich today, Mike Dempsey out of Jacksonville. We've talked to Mike many times about fantasy football and the Jaguars, his team of his specialty, are one of the more interesting fantasy teams this year, if not just teams, because you've got a lot of questions. You've got, with Etienne moving on, what their running back breakdown looks like. Will Travis Hunter play offense at all? Is Brian Thomas actually good? Great rookie season, big step back, maybe injured. What's he worth? Jacoby Myers there. They have a running back, I think, out of Syracuse, LaQuint Allen, who could be relevant as like a depth pick in fantasy. Maybe he means something, like a pass catcher. They drafted two.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show, How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend, Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Tight ends. So Jacksonville has a lot of stuff to talk through, and we'll do that and just general fantasy stuff with Mike today. As we get closer, when you get close to training camp, you get close to fantasy drafts too. And Brian Koziol at 5:30 talking about the Open Championship. I didn't watch very much of it today. A lot of it yesterday. I don't think my pick 10 picks look very good. But I watched Scheffler some today. And I don't think I've seen him make a putt in 3 years. Every hole seems to be the same in every tournament. Every major. I'm not watching every tournament. But in the majors, when it matters to me financially whether he wins, good or bad, it's just every tournament, if I didn't pick him, I think I'm afraid of him. I know he's the number one player. I think I'm afraid of him, and he's always 9 feet for birdie and misses, and it's a relief. And now this week I've got him, and it's just so it's so frustrating. Imagine being him. But, yeah, like, we'll talk to Brian about him and how things stand as already we come near to the end of round two. Yesterday, so it's 5 hours ahead. Makes that like 20 after 8 in England. Yesterday I heard they played until 9:55. So coverage goes off here in like 10 minutes. But they'll be, maybe not the leaders, but they'll be playing there for at least another hour. Some Bills this week. Talking to a couple of great guests, Ryan Paganetti on Wednesday, Rich Rebar yesterday, Sal three times. Just getting into different pieces of their roster and their offense and their tendencies. I know Sal caught one from Ryan today online about how when Dalton Kincaid was the only tight end on the field for a play or for the season, when he was the only tight end on the field last year for the Bills passed almost 80% of the time. So not surprisingly, right? That's intuitive. Big tell that when Kincaid is on the field and Knox isn't, that the Bills are throwing the ball at least most of the time. I wonder what the running plays were. Were they draws? Were they just like sneaks or something? Or were they just legitimate? Were they garbage time? I wonder how those 20% break down, because we all know what Kincaid is to them. And maybe this year, like when Sal tweeted about it, Ryan Paganetti responded to him like something to watch, because teams are loath to be like obvious like that. A couple of calls this week just about Joe Brady and feelings about the season, and most of it, frankly, sounds pretty negative. A caller maybe yesterday referred to them in a way to the Sabres of the last 15 years. Like, it's just all hope, that it's not real. And I don't know. I mean, I think the Bills deserve a little bit more credit than that. But one thing I'm thinking about is just sort of how to sum up how it sounds to me like the fans feel about this season. And I think wary is a good word for it. I think fans are unsure about what Brady is going to mean. And I think that probably, and this is something I want to get into here in the next few weeks, I think that probably includes some fans that were ready for McDermott to go. But then you promote from within, and does that really feel like the kind of change you were hoping for from them? So I think, I mean, maybe the number one thing, probably, at least if you have tickets, the number one thing on your mind is the new building and just how exciting and different and what that'll be like to go across the street this year for the first time and set foot in there and, you know, watch that Thursday night home opener in week two against Detroit. I think it'll just feel surreal. You'll look around, it'll look different. The people will be the same. The Bills will look the same, but just, where am I? I feel like that will be something in the air that night, and maybe for a year and maybe for longer, just for how long the Bills have been at the old place. I mean, 50 plus years. But I think in terms of the team, in this area, the fan base, I think there's a little bit of uneasiness about it, because really you have change in the coaching staff and you don't really have, I don't know what it would be, but you don't really have big roster movement that would calm you down. Again, I don't know what that would be. DJ Moore is a pretty big move. Bradley Chubb is a pretty big name. But, you know, a lot of the stalwarts, especially on defense, that you've been able to count on if they were healthy, you know, Matt Milano, you've been able to know what you've had in a lot of these players, and a lot of them are gone now. It's been a real couple of years of transition for them. So I think there is some anxiety in the fan base about them, but you probably, like I think I would have told the guy yesterday, you probably can relax a little bit. I mean, in terms of the betting odds, which are not people who are rooting for them and painting their faces and singing the shout song, they're still right up there. So whatever you think about it, you got to give that some respect, I think. We'll talk some NFL with Sammy P, awards, odds, and different things. Offensive Player of the Year is a fun one for him, and we've talked about that for a couple of years. MVP always, Coach of the Year always, some of that. We'll do some baseball with Sam, too. His White Sox are in Toronto this weekend. They're still only about even money to be in the playoffs, even though they're in first place in the American League, has a lot of teams with losing records. So we'll get his analysis of that. As I said, Mike Dempsey and Brian Koziol today as well. Maybe some World Cup and more with Sam, too, if he's up for it. He's not a big World Cup guy. Eddie Vedder. I got to ask him about Eddie Vedder. Maybe he'll just bring it up before I can even do that. Thanks for being with me on this hot Friday afternoon. Bulldog back on Monday with me. I'm Mike Shope, and this is WGR.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's really getting to me, watching this golf tournament, how I can almost never see the ball on an approach shot or a drive. On these drives, I think I'm not sure if they're using drones all the time, but the viewpoint is from so high up, and you're just looking down on this dead brown terrain with bunkers that are like the same color. And I feel like I've got no chance at finding the ball. They better tell me. They better zoom in, or else I'm just lost. And it's working on my psyche. Like, ugh, is it me? I brought this up with Brian yesterday. He gave me a little bit of a break. But, man, like, I just watched this one shot, and I have no idea where to look. The camera's not zooming in or zooming out. It's just sort of giving me the view of the green, and I have – maybe it's because they don't know either. maybe it's not me, but this tournament, I'm having a tough time. Matt Fitzpatrick, who missed the cut, one of my picks, he was the third favorite, said after his round today, like, I didn't really play that badly. The course was different. I was here 2 weeks ago, and it was green. Do they just sort of, whatever, if it doesn't rain? I think there is that, actually, where the weather is so changeable that they just kind of leave it to the elements, and if it doesn't rain for 2 weeks or something, then you get this. But I don't know. One way to do it. With me now on the Wester Hotline, the one and only Sam Panayotovich, Fox Chicago. All right, Eddie Vedder, let's get right into it. What is this story?
Cubs are celebrating their 10th anniversary of the World Series, 2016. I can't believe it's been 10 years. I actually covered that team as a young radio reporter. So all the guys are back this weekend. They're doing this anniversary party at Wrigley. I think it's tomorrow. But last night, you know that podcast that Anthony Rizzo and David Ross do? Have you heard of it?
I have.
Yeah, Lovable Reunion is what they call it. And they got basically 8 of the players to come in and do a live studio, not studio show. They're at the Chicago Theater. And they're all sitting in chairs around a table. Joe Maddon's there, John Lester, Jake Arrieta, Dexter Fowler, Jason Hayward, Miggy Montero, and then Ross and Rizzo. And then at the end, they do an encore. After they show the Cubs win the World Series, they blow all the confetti out, and they're playing the Go Cubs Go song. And then they go, you know, all good shows have an encore. And they bring out Eddie Vedder, who plays Someday We'll Go All the Way live. And people are, like, crying and clapping. And it was really cool, man. It was. And then Vedder's in the postgame. They had, like, a friends and family room that I was a part of. And, yeah, we're sitting there drinking. Eddie Vedder's, like, 2 doors down. You know, it's crazy.
Is he pretty approachable?
Yes, he is.
It seems like it.
Yeah, and you know, Mike, when the Cubs were making this run, obviously they hadn't won the curse. There was this huge Billy Goat thing and, you know, all this crap. But Vedder, during the World Series, would play acoustic guitar on Waveland Avenue outside the stadium after World Series games.
Wow.
I mean, this is a celebrity. He's a celebrity, and he's sitting on a stoop right outside the ballpark, just playing Someday We'll Go All the Way. He is a super Cubs fan. And he's not one of those guys like John Cusack who flips. Cusack, he's a Sox fan when the Sox are good, and he's a Cubs fan when the Cubs are good.
Yeah, Vedder was at the World Cup. They showed him one game, and a child went up to him, and I could read his lips saying, "What's your name?" Like, he was talking to the kid and probably signing something. I don't know what else was that. What else happened there, but he's had that persona, I think. Were you at Game 7 in Cleveland?
No, they didn't send me to Game 7. I was so upset. But I covered all the games at home that year, all the playoff games, too. And then the World Series came, and they sent, like, the morning sports guy instead of the weekend guy.
Okay.
Different story for a different day. Another thing on Vedder, too. I know we're going to talk betting. And I got plenty of updates from Vegas on things that wise guys are betting and not betting. But I've never, and I've seen Eddie now probably 5 or 6 times, I've never seen that guy on his phone, ever.
All right. That's a compliment, I think.
Yes, it is.
Yep. The one thing I remember about Game 7, Chicago-Cleveland, not really caring too much who won. I guess I probably wanted Cleveland to win. They had their own drought. But the weather report, like whatever inning, late innings, suddenly, like, here come these thunderstorms. And what are they going to do about this? I remember sort of like panicking in my house watching the game on Fox, thinking like the storms are imminent and it's tied in the 9th or something like this. And there could be hours before they pick the game back up. It never happened, though. It never happened until, I mean, I assume after the game was over. So I remember being really sort of stunned that they got it in.
I remember having the under in the game, and when Rajah Davis hit that home run off Chapman, I wanted to cry because then they had to go to extras and all that. They actually did talk about that last night. When the rains did start, you know, downpouring, I guess the head of Fox called the commissioner of baseball and said, you know, if we just pause this and start the game at 7 o'clock tomorrow, we can make $25 million. And then Theo and the GM of the then-time Indians, I think Chris Antonacci is his name, they were like, no, let's finish this tonight because we won't be able to sleep.
Yeah, that's crazy. So it did eventually rain. All right, your White Sox are in Toronto this weekend. I read, I think maybe from Evan Abrams, baseball's most profitable money line team this year, the White Sox. That's common sense. I mean, they've been bad for years, and maybe they're kind of a hard sell. Tied for first coming out of the break, but still only about even money to make the playoffs from what I saw at Bet Online. You and I both have them to do it. What should the numbers be?
Well, I don't think they should be, you know, well, I don't think you should bet 2-1 to win the division at this point. In fact, like, you're starting to see some serious steam on the Tigers. Yep. In a lot of ways. And we've talked about the Tigers. I mean, they're the best team in the American League since June 1st, record-wise. They've just been on a tear. And now they're healthy-ish. Scooble's back. They're not going to sell at the deadline. They didn't have the greatest start to the season, but, Mike, they're 3.5 out of the wild card right now. Mm-hmm. So they're right there. I don't know. We talked about this on Bear Bets this week. I don't know if it's a better idea to bet them to win the division or to bet them to win the pennant. Because, like, if they get in as a wild card team and you got to face Tarek Skubal game one, that's a problem. I don't know that they're going to win the division because they've got a much, you know, tougher path there. Currently, like, 6.5 back. Is it better to take the Tigers to win the division or win the pennant? What do you think?
Ooh, well, I think I might like both as you lay it out. It depends on it. I think I'm not sure I have a strong enough opinion on Chicago or even Cleveland to push against what, I mean, how many wins is it? Is it 88 wins? Is it 90?
I don't even think it's that high, honestly. Okay. It could be an 85, 86 win division. It's not a great division. The Sox are in first, and I'm happy because we gave this audience over 66.5. I think we'll get there. They're 50-45 now, but I don't, like, I would never bet the White Sox at 2-1 to win the division. When we were talking about 40-35 before the year, now they're 2-1, and it's just not a bet I would ever make.
Yeah.
Of all those teams, though, if I had to pick one of those four, we're throwing the Royals in the garbage, White Sox, Guardians, Twins, and Tigers, at this point, I would bet the Tigers, I think.
I've heard, too, how they want to be buyers, and I think it's probably just because they have him. Like, Skubal would be the piece you move if you're selling. And they don't want to do that. I respect that. I mean, they don't want to do that. They're close enough. And you talk about 3.5 from the wild card. The wild card teams in the last spot right now have losing records. So whether they win the division or not, it won't take that much for any of those teams. Detroit and Boston probably, right, have been the two best American League teams for the last 6 weeks or month or so. Boston keeps winning. So those would have been pretty likable bets now if you'd made them a month ago. Detroit or Boston.
I looked at this the other day. The best teams in the major since June 1st. Do you want to guess who the number one team is?
Tell me.
Marlins.
Marlins. Okay, right.
Yep. Marlins are 26-11 since June 1st.
Yep.
I got a little ticket on them to make the playoffs. That's a nice one. I'm not going to just brag about all my good bets. I also bet the Mets to win the pennant. That will not happen. So in order, it's Marlins, Phillies, Cubs, and Tigers. The best four teams since June 1st.
Very good. Texas has made a move to first place in the AL West. I'm not sure their record is that great. Another pretty weak division. So are there any second half, as we wrap on baseball, any second half bets you like from, you know, as we start post All-Star break?
You know, we were having this conversation the other day, and it's probably not going to win. But if Pete Crow Armstrong continues to play like this, I mean, his June was unheard of, the numbers he put up in June. I think there were two players that had done what he did in June. It was Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig. You're like, oh, okay, and Pete Crow Armstrong. Yeah. Can he win the MVP, like, over Ohtani? I guess is the question I'm asking rhetorically, because I look at the price now.
He's the second Ohtani, choice.
Yeah, he's the second choice, and he's a distant second choice because Ohtani's minus 1,000. Pete Armstrong is 8-1 though to win the MVP. It probably doesn't win. I think it could be a fun run. The voters are just enamored with Ohtani, and if he has any of those games on the stretch where he strikes out 10 guys and hits 2 home runs, you know, like, that could seal it.
I mean, you could win that backing into it, like the way whoever is going to win the AL MVP is going to back into it with Judge out for months. I mean, Ohtani's knees, he's not pitching. Maybe that ends up being a bigger problem. And then if it's early enough in the season where that happens, somebody else has to win.
what they're trying to do at this point, here's what the books are doing. They don't want you to bet Ohtani. So they're going to make him as expensive as possible. So if you want to do it now, you got to lay $1,000 to win $100, which nobody should do. I guess if you're super rich, you can do it, but that's an insane bet when he was, you know, plus 110 before the season. But now they're pushing all these other guys out. The PCA's 8-1, Schwarber's 35, Soto's 40. They kind of want you to pick the apple a bit because they know that Ohtani's likely going to win. But, man, that PCA number, if he does what he did in June and he can keep this up for three more months, he could win it. I just don't know that he will.
With Sam Panayotovich, I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today. NFL MVP, Sam. It's tight at the top with all the big quarterbacks there. Justin Herbert is somebody that I sort of couldn't get behind. I feel like everybody is saying that, though, and the last time I looked, he was the third choice. So where is the value in MVP?
I looked at a guy like Jaden Daniels, who we're now putting below Drake May and Caleb Williams. Well, Jaden was hurt last year, obviously. He played through injury and didn't make it the full season and all that, but that's a guy that just has no shine right now. Like, there's nobody talking about him.
Okay.
And, you know, 25-1. I'm in that. Like, we've talked for years now about prices and ranges and all that. And, you know, I think he was the fifth favorite last year coming into the season off his rookie campaign. And now he's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Like, he's way down there. 25-1 is the best number on Daniels. And, you know, also on Bear Bets this week, we were talking about the NFC East. And one guy brought up the Eagles, another guy brought up the Cowboys. Another guy brought up the Giants, and I'm like, oh, the Commanders are going to win then. You know, because that's kind of how it is. But that's the first number that jumps off to me. If he can put the pieces together there and he's healthy, which by all accounts he is, 25-1 is a really good number on Jaden Daniels.
The shine being off him, as you put it, makes sense to me. I mean, I know it more from a fantasy perspective. And Sam, I drafted him recently in the 9th round.
Like, wow.
It's 3 rounds after Lamar Jackson. It's 5 rounds after Josh Allen. It's after Caleb Williams or Joe Burrow in this case. I mean, it doesn't always go in the same order, of course, but it's almost like people have forgotten.
I remember him being like the fifth quarterback off the board last year.
Yeah, and he is almost that anyway. It's a little bit that the position is being pushed down, but still, I mean, with the upside there with Daniels, I mean, I'd much rather have him in fantasy than Burrow. And even Caleb Williams, I think. That's closer.
I got a couple notes for you on both Burrow and Caleb. So
good.
John Murray runs the book at the Westgate in Vegas, one of my dear friends, and he said that the Bears, I laugh before I even tell you, the Bears have the most tickets to win the conference, the Super Bowl, and Caleb Williams has the most tickets to win the MVP. So the Bears,
they're back.
As of now, are the most public team in Vegas.
They're back. It took 1 year.
Yeah, so they'll go 5-12. Joe Burrow and the Bengals are the wise guy team this year. I told Bulldog this last week, but we can re-rack it because another sharp group came in and bet them to win the conference and win the Super Bowl. There's multiple groups that have went into Vegas and bet big on the Bengals to win the conference and to win the Super Bowl. So if that's the case, maybe Joe Burrow MVP isn't the worst idea.
I don't think Burrow is a bad idea for MVP. I don't want him in fantasy over Jaden Daniels because he never runs. But I don't think – he's what, second favorite, Burrow? And they're favored in 15 games? So, yeah, I mean, that adds up. Plus, we're living at a time where there are legacy-type votes, like John Cooper and Matthew Stafford. So maybe Burrow, it's his turn at that position. Offensive player of the year, we've talked about that a couple of years. You like Jefferson?
Yeah, I'm going there. I like both of the receivers from LSU, to be honest. Chase is 10-1, but there's a bigger range on Justin Jefferson. He's as low as 12, and he's as high as 18. So go to FanDuel, get the 18. Don't bet the 12 or the 14. 18-1, if he gets any quarterback play, he could be a weapon.
Big if.
I mean, I'm okay on Kyler Murray. McCarthy is a zero, but even last year, with no quarterback play, Jefferson had over 1,000 yards and 141 targets. At least Kyler Murray can throw the ball. But here's the issue, Mike. Last year, Jefferson had 2 touchdowns. 2.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
crazy.
It
can't happen again. It won't happen again. There's no way.
One of the more interesting situations in the league is Murray there, as he's been such a polarizing figure. And it looked like last year, McCarthy had lost Jefferson week one in Chicago. Like, there's conversations on the sideline week one. So not a great omen for your season. All right, before you go, World Cup, no, that's not your thing. They might have a problem getting the game in with the smoke.
Well, we'll figure out how to get that thing played. Too much money on the line there, especially at Fox.
Yes.
Here's what I can tell you. I got a text on Wednesday to bet the over in the third place match, and I did that. The only problem is, Mike, all those threes are long gone. It opened three. Three over, minus 130, minus 135. Every book is 3.5 now. So these guys just crushed over three. I still kind of like it. You need four to win, obviously, but I'll tie on the three. You'll lose on the 3.5. But serious money on the over in England and France, over three, and now it's 3.5. You can get over 3.5 at plus money if you want.
I was going to ask you if that's a 90-minute bet, but it wouldn't matter if it were three.
Correct. Yeah, well, it is a 90-minute bet plus the extra time, like the extra 5 minutes, not the 30 minutes.
Overtime. Yeah, I guess you could. You know, one of the Argentina, Swiss went 1-1 to 3-1. If you had a full time wager, but this would only be the regulation time, so to speak. All right.
I had a guy. Real quick, Mike. I had a guy bet against Argentina three straight times. He did it with Cape Verde. He did it with Egypt, and he did it with England, and he lost all three. He's like, it's like betting against Mahomes.
Yeah, a little bit messy. Very good. Thanks for your time, Sam. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, you too, man. See you.
Sam Panayotovich, Fox, Chicago. Formerly BetMGM, Chicken Dinner, although he might not still be completely detached from that. They just haven't put a show up in a while that I've seen. Mike Dempsey coming up at 4. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.